Introducing the Two-Way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the Two-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the Two-Way for yourself at NewBalance.com.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
The following is a GoPowerCat.com production.
Spring football is over at Kansas State, so what could we possibly talk about for nearly an hour? Well, for the most part, you get to decide. It's Ask the Insiders Day on the K-State Insiders. And oh, yeah, basketball has a transfer portal commitment. We'll get to that in just a second when I bring in the boys. Welcome to the Insiders.
Welcome to the K-State Insiders, your Kansas State sports show, presented by Synergy Financial Partners. Now let's go to the rolling Flint Hills, home of the Cats and Dogs studio. Here's your host, Tim Fitzgerald.
Welcome to the Insiders. I am Fitz. Why is our brand showing up as red today? That's kind of odd. Glenn Kenley will be joining us because there has been kind of late breaking news here for Kansas State. Not RJ Jones, but CJ Jones has committed. I'm going to have problems with this, but Ryan Gilbert, tell us what K-State just added.
It's going to be another Jones coming in the coming days, right? They just keep getting Joneses, but yeah, this is exciting. I don't know if this is maybe the level of a Doug McDaniel type commit, but that's okay, right? He's, you know, not every guy has to be a superstar, but still a lot of things to be excited about here with CJ Jones. I got to stop myself from saying RJ Jones. CJ Jones from UIC, a guy that averaged north of 11 points a game last year, over 4 assists as well. So right there, that tells you that, you know, he's a guy that Drum Tang's going to like to play. In his offense, I think he's going to fit well in that five-out scheme, assuming that kind of stays around next year. He's a guy that you can see in purple. It makes sense, right? He's from St. Louis. He's got ties to Michaela Bridge, that high school. And so I think on this visit was, you know, having Buddy Rich there was maybe more of the icing on top, the cherry on top, more than anything. You know, Tang and Jones really hit it off, and things went well from our understanding. So it's a big I don't want to say it's a huge, you know, this isn't going to make or break. You know, this isn't going to lift K-State to a whole new level, so to speak. But this is a type of guy that you want to bring in to your program. I'll save some of the breakdowns, the X's and O's for the film study that I'll do. Probably that'll be up in the morning tomorrow for our VIP subscribers at Go Power Cat. But he's a shooter. You know, he's got good three-point shooting numbers from UIC last season. He was once committed to Missouri outside, fresh out of high school. And so, you know, the Power Five potential is always there. You know, Creighton and Illinois were the two teams that I think were probably most involved in his transfer portal recruitment. But, you know, he wasted no time after that visit to Kansas State, you know, committing. Obviously, things went well, like I said. And so what does this mean for K-State now moving forward? Well, the forward spot, the center spot, the power forward spot, whatever you want to call that, is still very it's empty pretty much. And so, you know, maybe K-State's still looking at some other guards out there, some guys that can play the wing. But, you know, you've got to assume now that the staff is going to hit it heavy on those big dudes down low. But obviously a very exciting commitment here for Kansas State, number two of the offseason, and still many more to go.
Just an athlete, right? I mean, I mean, he shot, 37% from three, but you wouldn't describe him as a pure shooter. he's just going to be one of those fun athletes. But at 6'5", sometimes those athletes, let's take Desi Sills as a perfect example. Incredible player, not a great outside shooter, but made a huge impact with his athleticism, but not nearly as tall and rangy as CJ Jones.
Sure. And just being an athlete, right? That's something you can't teach or train or put into a guy. You just got to have that in you. And if you have that, then you can kind of work out how you want to have them fit in your offense, how you want to have them as, how is their role going to be? And so there's those things that you just can't put into a guy that a guy like CJ Jones is going to have.
Yep, I agree.
Well, my thing is, if he can handle the ball and he can create his own shot and create from up for others, that is something that K-State sorely lacked last year. guys that could actually create for others without turning the ball over every two or three other possessions. If he can do that, K-State's found something. Like I said, to add some length as an athlete, somebody that can create his own shot and again, create for others, it's exactly what K-State needs. Exactly.
Yep, I agree. Shakedown, I'll get to your question in just a second, but this one follows right into what we're talking about. Thomas Williams, can you break down the basketball rotation will look like? It's still kind of early for that because we don't know the big men, right, Gills?
Yeah, I think there's going to be competition throughout the entire roster, though, without a doubt. You look at the point guard spot, the two, I mean, Castillo and Ames are going to be fighting. Doug McDaniel is, you know, I think the odds of him starting are pretty high, right? So RJ Jones is returning. There's a lot of just guys in the mix. I don't know if we can, you know, comb through that. There's obviously a lot of, you know, summer basketball in the practice facility to go on for some guys to maybe emerge there. But it's going to be, I mean, I don't even want to try to break it down right now just because we don't know how these guys are going to, you know, compete in the offseason. But more importantly, there's still dudes to be added from the portal. There's going to be, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 dudes, depending on how things shape out with, you know, Gasan and Glover, Kaluma with the NBA, right? But they're going to get more than a couple dudes. So it's tough to see what the rotations are going to be like.
I would agree with that. Let's bring in our fourth here. Glenn Kinley has shown up from writing about CJ Jones, correct?
Correct. Yeah, I had to get that one published before I can hop on air.
Here we go. Let's get to Shakedown's question. Thank you for the super chat. Folks, you can do the super chat. Jump to the front of the line down there in the corner of your YouTube screen. Shakedown's worried about any surprise departures tomorrow. And, of course, he's referring to the football transfer portal opens on Tuesday. And our friend Josh Pate at 24/7 Sports expects chaos. I had Chris Hummer on the Big 12 Insiders on Friday. He's our transfer portal expert, or one of them, at 247. And he expected less chaos, but anytime the portal opens, there's a level of chaos. Big B, I don't think K-State's going to have any major departures, but fans should probably brace themselves for departures, because if you're coming out of spring football and you're third string, on any team, you're probably thinking about that portal.
Absolutely. The thing about that, most teams right now, you're going to get some. I don't think K-State is going to get any starters or maybe guys that are going to be in the rotation. There might be one or two, but for the most part, I think they're going to be okay. It's the depth that you're going to lose. That's what a lot of these teams are losing during the spring. It's the depth behind it. Maybe you transferred somewhere and you thought, you know what, I'm going to go into spring, I'm going to win a job, and then you don't win the job. Even backups are like, you know what, I can go somewhere else and I can go win that job in the summertime or go compete for it because I wasn't able to do it here. Maybe the circumstances weren't what I thought. And, you know, that's the one part about the transfer portal that I don't like, is I transfer in January, all of a sudden, I don't like it, I didn't win the job, I'm out of here in May and I'm going somewhere else. So, but it is what it is. Those are the rules. I don't think K-State's necessarily going to lose anybody. I think we'll lose some, but I don't think anybody that's in the two deep is going to be somebody that K-State's going to lose.
I mean, they're tracking offensive linemen, so that tells me that they might be losing some of the backup pieces there. I don't think they're going to lose any frontline pieces.
Right.
They just also offered a defensive tackle today, and that's been a spot I thought they might add it one more piece to. So nothing too surprising so far as they try to establish the proper depth you need to get through a season. But again, Shakedown's right. Chaos could ensue tomorrow, and we could see some major transfers out of nowhere because there's been a lot of legal contact, tampering, so to speak, even though the NCAA isn't doing a thing about it. Right now, there's a lot of that going on in college football. So we'll see how it all pans out. Shakedown.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Fitz. K-State, did they have a DT that was either committed or maybe even signed that didn't end up panning out? Was it a JUCO kid?
Yeah, kid from Garden City. Ended up what we used to call in the day a non-predictor, which was he didn't academically qualify. He had a class he had to finish up, took two cracks of it at it, didn't get it done. So maybe he'll end up somewhere where he can still play. I would think he still needs to get out of junior college with, you know, he was there because of grades. So right. I would think that, but that he was a big loss, but they felt pretty good about their D tackles because Uso was out all spring until the very end, but he didn't do any full contact stuff. So they worked a lot of their young guys and they liked what they saw, but I think they just need another piece here.
Yeah.
Let's see.
You always need D linemen, by the way.
Yeah. You can't have enough. Yeah, I mean, you just run out. Our friend Brad says, please give your evaluation of the two players in basketball has committed so far in the portal. I've noticed they're both 5 assists a game. Yeah, get into Doug McDaniel a little bit more there, Gills.
Yeah, I mean, Doug McDaniel's the guy that I've repeatedly said that reminds me of Marquise Noel, and I would assume that the staff shares that same thought of him being a guy that can go out and not only score, but more importantly, be a guy to facilitate the rock around and share it with his teammates. And Doug McDaniel did an interview with D. Scott Fritchin at K-State Athletics and talked about how he's excited to be more than just a scorer. Back at Michigan, McDaniel was asked to be a scorer, and now I think he's excited to obviously continue to score, but set up his teammates. He's got tremendous vision. That's really probably what reminds me of the most about Noel with McDaniel is his vision. He's got that Denny Clemente flair in him as well. And so, yeah, I mean, you mentioned it, guys. You know, K-State last year, the turnovers were the Achilles heel for this team. And so you bring in guys that can assist the basketball. That was, you know, Tyler Perry was never really a true bona fide number one point guard in his collegiate career. He was always more of a scorer, and so you bring him in, and obviously he could score. He could facilitate for K-State, but it just wasn't, you know, things didn't pan out, and that's kind of what went wrong for K-State last season at the end of the day. And so you get guys, I think that was probably something that K-State staff looked at and said, yeah, need to get some guys that can just be good facilitators on the offense, right? You don't have to, you know, just because McDaniels is here doesn't mean you got to, you know, shy away from getting more guards. That being said, you've got to look at some forwards now without a doubt. But yeah, so yeah, I mean, the assists are huge, right? They're huge. And
yeah,
State assists and turnovers, that's a hand in hand number, right? So you can limit the turnovers, you get more points. Those are going to be assists on a lot of those baskets.
I don't know what you guys discussed before I got on here, so I apologize if we're repeating. I could be way off on this. Is Jones' commitment, maybe you would speak to it, Gills, any sign of a decision from Kaluma and that, or is there a way that those two guys could both be playing significant minutes next year? It seems like they're would maybe be a similar role. Am I wrong?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you're not wrong, but I think it's, you know, coin flip 50-50 with Kaluma. I haven't heard much anything else over the last, you know, number of weeks. It's been, I mean, I think it's going to be a process that's going to take some time with Kaluma, obviously. And so I was always kind of the understanding that it was like 60-40 that he would stay. So until I hear otherwise, I don't think that. And I know that, you know, Jones, when you see Doug McDaniel commit, maybe you don't want to go to K-State just because that's less minutes. That's less pieces of the pie that are available to you. But obviously he's here, or not here, but he was here this weekend, but he committed shortly after the visit. So I think that goes back to, though, when you're initially recruiting Arthur Kaluma, okay, you're not going to sugarcoat anything. You're not promised minutes at all. So I don't view it as the staff trying to replace Kaluma, saying, you know, thinking he's going to be gone. Now, obviously he might leave. That's still on the table for sure. But I think they were honest with the commit with Jones this weekend. They were honest last year when they got Kaluma. They're probably honest now with Kaluma with this NBA stuff. Like, you're not promised any sort of minutes, but I know that they would like to have him back. And I don't view it as a replacement for Kaluma, so to speak.
Yeah. They just, I look at it. They got a lot of guards, man. I wonder
a lot.
Who's gonna play? And because I good problem to have, I guess. I think they have a lot of guards that can, you know, give you valuable minutes. And so, interested to see who plays, who gets a bulk of those minutes, and how they split that up, and if they lose any guys to the portal who aren't happy about the minutes that they got because they have 9-10 guards or whatever it is.
Well, the one thing I think is I would think those two guys could play together on the court at the same time. Look, you can't have enough ball handlers, and Kaluma's big enough, especially in positionless basketball like it is today. He can play the four without any problems in college basketball. So I think, you know, that might have been the sell job is like, look, you're going to play together. You're not replacing him. You guys are going to play together. We need as many scorers, ball handlers, guys that can do stuff with the ball on the court as possible, not limit it and say, okay, well, this guy's going to get 25 minutes. You're going to get 18. I don't think that's the route you go. I think you got to get as many ball handlers and guys out there that can score as possible. That was a problem for K-State last year. They just didn't have enough ball handlers, guys that could actually do something without the fear of turning it over. We're all going to have turnovers. That's the way it works. But every time somebody drove to the basket, you're just thinking to yourself, oh my God, he's going to throw it away. Oh, he's going to dribble off his leg. Oh, something's going to happen. The more people that you can get out there that can handle the ball, the better. And I think that's kind of the way they're looking at it. It might be a lot of guards, but you know what? Look at UConn this year. They had a big guy. Don't get me wrong. But then with the rest of their guys, they were 6'7" and below. Now, they didn't have any 5'9 guys, but they didn't have all these monsters out there running around on the basketball court. They had one big guy, or they had two, and they kind of interchanged, and that was it. I go, and that's kind of how you play basketball these days in college basketball and pros too. You got to have ball handlers, and I think the more, the better.
I think the ideal college basketball roster, you've got 13 scholarships. So if you can get seven guys to fill those 1 through 3 spots and then five guys for the 4 and 5 spots, and a guy like Kaluma that can swing between the 3 and 4 as your 13th player, I think that puts you in a pretty good position. But K-State might even go even smaller with another guy like Kaluma that could hop up and play the 4. I know they missed out on someone that they thought they had a good shot at, ended up going to Ole Miss under some interesting circumstances, but that was a miss in the portal, but that's just going to happen. You're not going to get everyone you want. Let's see here. What do we got?
We got to take in the super chat.
Do we have another one?
Yep. Canelio.
We're way down there already. Okay. Canelio, bring it on, brother. Good morning. Good Monday afternoon. Boy, I can't read, guys. It's going to be a long show if I'm reading questions. In terms of special teams starters, is there an assumption that we already know who the two returners are heading into 24? No, I don't think so.
No way.
I think that's an interesting question, Canelio. And honestly, it's one that we failed to ask during the last press conference, or, you know, the kind of group press conference we had after the final practice. And I think it's probably still wide open. They were asking any and everyone to, you know, show their talents on that side. They did point out that Sterling Lockett, who was the punt returner in the bowl game, not the tackler on a fake punt. He didn't do that job very well, but as a returner, they like him. They pointed out that Sterling has really made progress this spring. And he was essentially in the same role as Phil Brooks, and now that Phillip's gone after 19 years of college, maybe Sterling Lockett will ascend into that position on the punt returns. Kick returns, though, are interesting. I think we could see a guy like Joe Jackson back there. Certainly some of these defensive backs come in. That's my preference. If you have a DJ Reed type that can go out there and be your kick returner, that way they're coming off the field no matter what as your offense goes on. You don't have to put a starter out there who's winded or has to come out for the initial plays of that possession. So that's just my preference, but that is a position I need to backtrack and ask about.
Well, I think
money well spent.
Before we decide who the kick returners are and all that good stuff, I think K-State needs to go back into the lab and start putting more emphasis on the return games in itself. That was the one part that was really lacking last year, and I know we mentioned it several times. So it doesn't matter if you got David Allen back there. If the emphasis isn't put on the actual return game, it's not going to matter who you have back there. So I think that's something that K-State, I think they worked hard on it this spring. I really do. And I think that's something they're going to hit hard again in, you know, in fall camp. And I think we're going to see a totally different K-State return games this coming season and realize, hey, this is a weapon that we've utilized for the last 30 years. And we didn't do that this year, and we're going to get back to that. I don't think it was a slight fit. I think it might have just been, you know, we got so much going on. It's just, let's just get all this in there, and we'll just get the ball wherever we get it, and we'll figure it out. Versus in years past, you know, this is a weapon, and we're going to use this as an absolute weapon. And it doesn't matter where you kick it. You better kick it out of the end zone, because if you don't, we're going to start minimum our 40-yard line.
Right.
Minimum. I think K-State gets back to that.
Yeah, it was the kick return and punt return elements of K-State were so good that teams would forfeit it. They just kick the ball out of bounds and give you good field position that way, but at least you weren't scoring a touchdown.
Correct.
And I think if K-State can get back to that, it'd be really good. And, of course, the rules have made kick returns in particular a little bit more challenging. I'd love to do what the NFL is going to do, what the XFL did with that 10 yards apart kickoff thing that is funky looking, but it's a good way to keep the return game in and the injuries down. And I'm kind of a fan of that. I'm going to be interested to see how the NFL does with that. Let's move on here to maybe the most important thing that is in the chat right now. Like and subscribe, Robert. Thank you very much. I always forget to do that. Make sure you're liking this video. You're making sure you're subscribing to the channel here as we continue to grow this channel and the Big 12 Insiders channel, which this isn't on, but make sure you're following that, subscribing to that when you get a chance. Let's get to this one now. Noah wants to know, what do you see the floor and ceiling for K-State football next season? That's a great question. And guys, I'll let you go first, but I think it's been a long time since I've had such a gap between floor and ceiling in my estimation. Mm-hmm. Usually I'm kind of dialed in on what it is, but there are so many new pieces.
Yeah.
Really talented new pieces. We got another question about the DNs. Those kids are amazing, but they are redshirt freshmen for the most part. And they're going to be really young, and can they, you know, be counted on for every down? It's going to be interesting. But Glenn, give us a shot. Your floor and
ceiling. Yeah, well, I was just talking to somebody about this the other day and basically echoed what you just said, that I think there are so many question marks. People are going to take that as a bad thing. No. I don't think it is. That's not a bad thing. What I say is there's a lot of unknowns. And if all those unknowns end up being everything we hope and dream that they could be, they're going to I think they could win 11 games. If all those unknowns end up being, oh, they were okay, I'm not going to put a number, but, you know, I think it could be not as many, right? So I think that there are a lot of interesting question marks. I even look at the defensive back group. Joe Klanderman said something about their corners, I think, that he thinks they have the best 1-2 corners in the league, in the Big 12, which is, I don't think many people were expecting. And then one of their offensive linemen the other day said he genuinely thinks that they can still have, I say still because maybe they had it last year, the best offensive line in the Big 12. If these things are true, K-State's going to be really good. And but again, there's a lot of guys that we haven't seen play a ton of football, including Avery Johnson, to be completely honest. Fans fall in love with potential, and everybody does. Scouts fall in love with potential. And we've seen him show that potential, make no mistake about it, but we haven't seen the guy play 12, 14 games. And so he's obviously the biggest one that I shouldn't say that, but he is a big piece of their success. But then you mentioned the DN group. I look at the DBs. I think they're going to be good, but if they can be great, if they can be locked down, that's a game changer. If the DNs can get home and get some more pressure on the quarterback, that's a game changer. If the wide receiver group can take that next step that Kansas State fans have been wanting them to take for how many years now, that's a game changer. So if everybody takes that next step that people are hopeful they can, I think it can be really good. But again, that's a big if.
Yep. Big B, what do you think?
I mean, the gap is going to be, I mean, you're right, Fitz. I don't know that I've seen it be this big in a while. But look, I'm always the same. Offensive line. It's going to come down to those guys. If the offensive line is what we think it can be and has been in the past, K-State's going to be just fine on offense, regardless of what they do. I think Avery, look, everybody wanted this kid for a reason. Yes, he hasn't really played some, but, you know, he hasn't really been, other than the bowl game, put in a situation where he's got to throw the ball on a consistent basis and be, okay, let's drop back, throw the football, go to your first, second, third read, see what's happening. He hasn't been put in that situation. Not really. And you could even say that about the bowl game. In the bowl game, it was just, hey, drop back. If this guy's open, throw it. If not, run out of bounds. You know, and that's kind of what it was. And that's okay. I go, and we'll see what's going on. But you mentioned it, Glenn, the defensive backs, if the DBs and the corners are as good as, I've had some people tell me this could be the best they've been in a while. If that's really the case, then I think the defense is really something that we have to take a look at that could be overlooked, because we look at what's coming back at linebacker position is going to be really good. Defensive line, we're going to have to see, but young doesn't necessarily – it's easier to be young on the defensive line than any other position on the field, because it's, look, get after the quarterback. So that's what you got to do. Run through this gap, get after the quarterback. Defensive ends, don't give up, contain. You know, and I know that sounds simple, but I promise you it's not more difficult than that. other than you have 400, 300, 400 pound linemen pushing on you. But it's, you know, if that's going to be the case, if our defensive backs are going to be as good as what the coaches think that they can be, I mean, I'll put a number on in case they can win 9-10 games. Now, if the offensive line falls apart, defense isn't what we think it's going to be, 5 wins is what it could be, you know, so in anywhere in between. But yeah, if they won 9 or 10 games, I wouldn't be surprised at all.
Well, you look at, I look at their schedule and I just, I don't know if it's the lack of OU and Texas on there or what, but I typically you look at the schedule and I think, at least for me, you know, let's say I look at it and I say, okay, they got 12 games. I think these 7 are wins and then these 5 I'm questionable on, or I might even be like, hey, I think these 7 are wins. These 3 are questionable on, and these 2 we probably drop. And right. So if you do it that way, that's 7 wins, 2 losses. And then say you win one of those other 3, that's an 8-win season. 2 of the other 3, that's a 9-win season. I look at this season and I think it's more like, hey, these 8 we win, and then these 4 are questionable. And I don't know if I look at any and say, oh, we're not winning that one, you know?
I agree. Right. If they were going to Utah, maybe I'd feel that way.
Right. Right.
But or even Kansas. I mean, they don't have Utah. They catch Arizona, which is a non-conference game, but still feels like one. And Kansas in Manhattan. So those, they benefit from that. You're right. The absence of Oklahoma and Texas takes away not necessarily great teams on an annual basis. Oklahoma was pretty consistent for a long time, but you knew they had players, they had dudes, and they could out talent almost anyone in the conference. I don't feel like anyone's currently in a position to out talent anyone in this league. I think the rosters are pretty comparable, you know, within a window of the best and the worst. But nobody's awful in this conference, and honestly, right now, nobody's proven to be awesome. And we'll see if Kansas State or Utah or Arizona or Kansas or someone can elevate themselves to that. Gills, take your shot at the floor and ceiling of this team.
Well, yeah, you mentioned good points with KU, and you know that game's at home. You don't have to play Utah. You know, Arizona, even that game being at home on a shorter week for Arizona, the road team, that stuff matters. That favors Kansas State. And so with K-State coming up, though, you guys mentioned the DBs, DNs. I think wide receivers are question marks. There's a lot of question marks. I do believe those will even themselves out, though. The number one thing, though, that it all starts with is quarterback. And I'm not going to waste any time talking about Avery Johnson's potential, but the more he's on film, the more these Big 12 coaches are going to be able to start to figure him out. God forbid an injury to Avery Johnson. And so the ceiling is certainly there for Johnson, but the floor, as such a young player, it is low. I think we all hate to say that, but it's very low for a player like that who may be, I don't want to say he's fragile because he doesn't have a bad injury history, but when you do run the ball, as we anticipate him to do, right, you're going to maybe see even some, you know, bumps and bruises associated with play. That's going to add up on you. And so, you know, the more that's on tape for him, you know, maybe he gets better and works around that and finds ways to always be getting better. But the ceiling's high, the floor is low, and Fitz, Big B, one of you guys mentioned it. Like, this is the gap. This is as wide as the gap has been in probably my lifetime, and Fitz and Big B, maybe even you guys as well.
Yeah. If you could see into the future, and you told me, again, I think if you told me they would win 10, maybe even 11 games, I would believe you. And if you told me they won 6 or 7, I would believe you. The two other things that I'll mention, and you mentioned the quarterback, and you mentioned how much he's going to run the ball. They don't necessarily have I don't want to say they don't have one, but who's the backup quarterback? And it's either a true freshman or it's a D2 transfer, right? And so they probably need something there if he does go down. And then the other thing, we talked about KU. In a weird way, is it almost unfortunate that K-State isn't on the road there this year? Not that you ever want to not be at home, but since you do have to alternate, if there was a year to be there, this year would be in Kansas City. And so I don't know if it'd be beneficial to get the road game out of the way when it's actually not in Lawrence, and maybe when your alumni in Kansas City can almost make that kind of a neutral site game. But like I said, you're never complaining about a home game.
Yeah, Jacob Knuth, the backup, will be a sophomore, but he hasn't played. He redshirted. Yeah. Up at Minnesota, then he came down and didn't play this year. They like him, But again, he has not played a game. And that brings me to this, and you touched it. It's the third rail nobody wants to discuss. K-State hasn't kept a quarterback healthy through a season in a while.
Yeah.
And Avery wants to get, he's at about 190 now. He said he wants to get up to 200 before the season. I had some advice on that. He didn't think beer and pizza was really in his plan. I thought, well, hell, you mean you want to put on weight? I can do that.
Yeah.
But the realistic is, if you're going to talk about a floor, what if it happens? So, I mean, the floor might be a 5-7 season, and we're all very disappointed. And, you know, it was a rough season to cover for us in the media, and the fans are down. I don't think that will happen. I think these coaches are good enough to, even with a backup quarterback, to manufacture some wins. But the ceiling for me is unbeaten in the regular season. Again, exactly what Glenn said. There's no one on here you look at and go, yeah, that's a loss. That, you right. know, it's going to, they might win it, but I doubt it. You know, the scales are kind of on the loss side of it, but there's none of that. No. I don't think they'll go unbeaten, but it's well within their capabilities, and I think they could get there.
Yeah. It raises the question, if you're putting out odds for their games, or if the books are putting out odds for their games right now, how many games, if any, would K-State be an underdog in?
Yeah.
Because Utah's the one that you think about, but that's in Manhattan. So that one maybe would be a close, you know, 1.5, 2.5 point spread. But I don't – and I'm not saying there won't be dogs at all, because obviously you lose two weeks in a row and then you play Utah. Yeah, you're going to be an underdog if they come in undefeated or something like that. So I'm not saying they won't end up being underdogs. But if you looked at it right now, I'm not sure they would be an underdog.
Yeah. And they don't play Utah this year.
Yeah, they don't play Utah. The toughest game that I think – I mean, I'm just looking at the schedule again just to refresh my memory. Obviously, BYU will be better, but K-State is better than they are. West Virginia, I think, has something. I think they figured out a couple of things. I think at West Virginia – will be tough. Nobody wants to say it. At Colorado, Colorado's going to be better.
I was gonna ask. I thought they were going to Boulder.
Yeah, going to Colorado. Look, nobody wants to say it because of all the hype that happened last year, and then they fell on their face. But if you actually take a deep dive, what Colorado was last year, they're not going to be anything like that this year. And they fixed their offensive line, supposedly. So they still have those weapons. The weapons were as good as anybody in the country. Right. But then their offensive line may have been the worst fits that I have ever seen an offensive line in 35 years that I can actually remember watching college football. That's not a knock. It's just I never saw an offensive line look so bad. Like, ball snapped to the quarterback, guys are on him. I'm like, holy mackerel. They're not even putting up any resistance. But that game will be tougher. I think K-State still can win because I think they'll be more physical. But you just look at the schedule, and then that last game, that the West Virginia and the Iowa State on the road, I think are going to be K-State's two toughest games all year. That the Iowa State game might be the one game where I'd say, depending on how the schedule works itself out for both, where they might be the underdog.
Yeah, I mean, you're right.
Just maybe, though.
We are overdue for a break. Let's get that in right here and hear from our Synergy Financial Partners, our partner in bringing you this show, our sponsor. Here we go. We'll be right back after this short break.
At Synergy Financial Partners, the mission is to change the way Americans plan for their financial future. Synergy doesn't just offer you a financial plan. At Synergy, the goal is to help you find your best financial future. Learn more at synergyfinancial.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back to the show. Let's head back to the studio.
We are the Big 12. Excuse me. Did it again, Big B. Almost got through it. We are the K-State Insiders. Fitz and Glenn and Big B and Gills, our weekly gathering. And our William Blythe has an interesting question. Why do we no longer have a spring game? Because they're meaningless. I mean, look, Ohio State put 80,000 in their stadium for a spring game. I think at places like that, you can still hold a spring game. When you have a fan base that so far exceeds your capacity, your stadium, a lot of people will look at a spring game as their opportunity to see the team. And, you know, that's just an advantage of having a national following. I know that Nebraska still has a spring game. Now, a spring game is your 15th practice, and you get 15 in the spring. It is your 15th practice. They held a scrimmage with officials and two teams in the indoor behind closed doors, but they really had to rotate some guys, and it got confusing because they didn't have enough depth at certain positions. So when we pulled in for our press opportunity after practice, I was surprised at all the people there. But besides about 30 recruits, there was, you know, some parents there to watch and a lot of ex-players. I know Skylar Thompson was there. Deuce Vaughn was there. Echo was there. I didn't catch who else was there, but it, you know, they have that. Coach Klieman just feels like having a public scrimmage means you can't show what you really want to show. And that gets me into this. Glenn, you just had, I believe, you just had a pretty good guest on, the new quarterbacks coach, right? On K Nation. Now that the drive is done for the season, make sure you're watching K Nation Sunday night. what did Matt Wells tell you? Was there discussion of the option?
Kind of, yeah. So the way he put it is he said, well, the option's used in every offense I've ever been in. And I think what he means by that is like everybody uses it. Some people use it very minimally and some people use it a ton and some people maybe use it more than others. So I think they're evaluating what does it look like for Kansas State. And the way that he said it, I think he used the words not a staple. He's like, this is not – it's not we're snapping this triple option every play or anything like that. Rather, I think it's just another, you know, you run the jet sweep, you run the flea flicker, you might throw the option in there. So it's another thing that teams have to prepare for, and it's another thing that, you know, could catch them off guard or could be dangerous. If it might be hey, if we get this defensive look, let's try it. I don't think it's going to be we're going to see it a ton, but I think we might see it a couple times, and I think it could be fun.
You know, we think of the option as the triple option, but he could be referring to the read option, right, which, you know, K-State's used quite a bit of, and Avery, I think, will be very effective in it, particularly if they add the run wrinkle in. But Big B, I hadn't thought about running the traditional option with Avery Johnson, but it's a little intriguing.
Yeah, I mean, I think the option is a great part of any offense in college football. Look, it's not like professional football because you do that, your quarterback's getting hurt, period, end of story. In college, the defensive ends, you can kind of manipulate those guys a little bit. You still got to pick and choose. You're not going to want to line up in the wishbone, you know, and run it every play. But absolutely, it's got to be part of what you are doing. And to put Avery out there, like, pick your poison. And I go, and if you make a false step, he's turning up field and he might be going the distance. That's how good and how fast he is. So option football has to be, I think it's always been a part, but I think it'll even be more of a part with Avery out there. Look, I don't want to confuse people or think that we're going to be running the option 10, 15 times a game. I don't think it's going to be anything like that, but you get 5-8 snaps of it, both sides, you know, especially on downs where you don't think that it's going to happen, a 3rd and 4 from midfield, something like that to keep people off guard. Yeah, absolutely. It's part of it, you know? So I think they're definitely going to be, they're going to run a little bit more of it. And it'll be in spots where people thinking we're going to throw the ball, but really we're going to go for it on 4th down. So what do you do when you go for it on 4th down? I've been telling people this for years. You run it on 3rd down. Well, run the option. And that's what we'll do.
Yep.
Yeah. On a slightly related note, I meant to tweet this, but Jordan Riley, K-State's new defensive back, the Ball State transfer. I think I got his name right.
Yep.
He said when we talked to him the other day after, I think it was after Matt Wall's press conference, he said that Avery had recently taken a quarterback sneak 90 yards to the end zone, which is just a funny visual to imagine of they're, you know, lined up under center. And then Avery just pops outside. He's gone.
He's got special speed. There's no doubt about it.
You're taking, Fitz, you're taking questions from chat, right? But I got a question for Big B. As a former offensive lineman, with maybe a relatively younger or a group that might need to gel a little bit with the offensive line for K-State this season? Is that something that's going to be a challenge for them with running the option? How hard is that for an offensive lineman?
Well, I mean, you got to be athletic because it's more you're cutting guys off, and that's what you're doing. You're cutting guys off or you're pushing them by. So it's not really a gel type of thing. I mean, all offensive line play is gelling, but it's more, hey, can you get to the spot? You know, and so you're kind of reading what the defense is giving you, but it's more just giving you getting to a spot and just running. So I don't think, and I know people are thinking, what are you talking about? I'm like, literally, that's what you do. Outside zone, any option plays like that, you are just turning and running that direction. And whoever comes in your gap, that's who you hit. Doesn't matter who it is, that's who you hit. And it kind of simplifies it, Gills, as an offensive line. So that part of it makes it easier. Now, executing it, it can be difficult, especially, and what they'll have to tell Avery is, you got to slow down a little bit. You got to let it play out. You got to let it read because he's so fast, he'll get out there and he'll get ahead of guys. And then you're thinking the offensive line's not blocking when they actually are, but you're ahead.
It's not there yet.
And that's right. And that's the difference is they'll take them. That's why when you see the false steps or the quarterback taking the step back on the option, that's what they're doing. You're giving their lineman an opportunity to get on their horse and get out there. I mean, remember Coach Snyder, and again, I don't want to always reference him, but I think he's a great reference. He always used to say, Michael, take a step back. Michael, take a step back. Because he never called it Mike or anything. You know, he said, Michael, take a step back. And he was telling him, hey, you got to wait for us to get there. And once we get there, we'll do our thing. But if you get there first, we can't help you. So.
Mm-hmm. Yep, could you imagine Cooper Beebe running the option? I mean, that he would just, whenever he got out of open space and ran into a linebacker and especially a DB, it was just pancake city. So that would be,
yeah,
we missed out on that. Him pulling over that way and a safety popping up, it would have just been, you know, buried beneath Bill Snyder Family Stadium.
I love it. I used to think, and everybody, why is he picking on the little guy? And I'm like, the little guy shouldn't have run up there.
Yeah,
I
go, he got his in my way.
Responsibility is to hit whoever runs in that gap. It doesn't matter if it's King Kong or if it's Mighty Mouse. Whoever runs in that gap, that's who's getting hit. And a lot of times it turned out to be Mighty Mouse, and Mighty Mouse was put on their back. It so be it, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Looks like Live Free brought us a little news here. Max Marsh, backup quarterback this spring, has announced he's going to go into the transfer portal. Of course, that opens tomorrow. Coach Kleiman just mentioned him, or maybe it was Coach Wells, that Max Marsh had a really good spring. Of course, he came as a quarterback, transitioned to safety, was a backup there and a special teams player. Then with everything that went on around the bowl time when they weren't sure they had a backup quarterback, Max switched back to quarterback to give them depth at QB for the bowl game and just stayed there. And they raved about his arm strength and how he looks like a quarterback. So apparently Max Marsh decided from our last year, I'm going to go play quarterback somewhere, probably transfer down, of course, and good for him. I'm happy for him. He was an important part of bowl prep. He really was. Let's see here. Jeff asks, Will Howard is a top four favorite to win the Heisman on FanDuel 12-1. Does that surprise you?
Nope. No,
I think we talked about it before, but it's if Ohio State wins, you know, 11 or 12 games and wins the Big 12, then he's going to be in the conversation the Big 10. he's going to be in the conversation at least. So I don't think he's going to win the Heisman. I wouldn't take that bet personally, but
I'm just telling you now. From the people that I've talked to, it's not even guaranteed that Will Howard is going to start the season as a starter. They love that freshman that is there. It is a battle. He wasn't promised, number one, the starting gig, and it is an absolute battle right now on who is going to be that starter. I mean, Will has the leg up, but there's a lot of stuff that can happen between now and then before we know who you saw it last year at Ohio State. It was the third game of the year before they had even decided who was going to be the starter. So just keep that in mind before we start handing them Heisman trophies.
Yep. Let's see. I'm not sure what this one says, but let's bring it up. Thomas Williams asked, if you had to paint a picture for football being competitive in the college football playoff while Avery is here, what would need to happen as far as development and recruiting? Obviously, Avery has to be at Heisman level. That's probably true too. Guys, I think they're getting there in talent. I think they have more. It's young, raw talent. I think they have more talent on this team I've seen since maybe those great teams from when Big B showed up in town, and it was all him. I mean, the Bishop guy had something to do with it, but mostly it was Brian Hanley. From 97 to 2002, 2003, there was so much talent on this team, in this program. You can go back and look at all the guys that went to the NFL. And lately, there just hasn't been that level. There's been some guys going to the NFL, not many. Mm-hmm. Guys, I think there's a bunch of NFL dudes on this roster. There might be a couple years away from, you know, showing that at that level. But I think they're building that talent. And now with the transfer portal, the ability to plug in pieces. When you're missing something, you come out of spring ball and you say, boy, we need this. I think that puts K-State at an advantage because – I think they're down to just needing pieces, which is, you know, they don't have any glaring weaknesses until the injuries hit, and they always seem to hit at the worst spot. But I think this is a team that could easily get to that 12-team playoff this year, but be competitive in it. Yeah, they're going to have to ramp up their physicality, their size, and honestly, some of the speed. I didn't see all the speed I wanted to see last year from this team, and I think they're getting there. I think they feel like they've brought in some good pieces. But let's be honest. Let's be blunt. The Ohio States, the Michigans, the Alabamas, the Georgias are at a huge recruiting advantage because of where they're at, and also I can't even imagine how massive their NIL collectives are in being able to go out and get players. So it's going to be an ongoing problem, but K-State's always been at a disadvantage in a budget, and they've overcome it, and we'll see if they can do it in the collective era of college football.
I think for K-State, probably too, your biggest recruiting tool is Avery Johnson, right? And if he has the season this fall that K-State fans are hoping that he does, then you better believe that's going to get you some guys next year, whether that's in the portal or whatever it is, because – if Avery's as good as people hope that he can be, then, you know, why not pitch that to a wide receiver? Hey, you come play for this kid. He's going to get you the football and you know, you're going to rack up yards because he's that good. And I think another thing that can help K-State that you mentioned the pros fits is sending guys pros is just a huge recruitment tool as well to be able to say we can get you to that next level. I think that O-line, K-State's got to have a pretty good recruiting pitch given what their O-lineman just did this past year and the number of guys that I think their whole starting O-line from this past season got invited to the Chiefs local pro day, like all four or five of them or whatever it was. And so that's got to be a pretty good pitch. If they can develop, like if they can have another breakout tight end this year, and then you have back-to-back years where you say Ben Sinnott and then whoever is this year and say we've really put together good tight ends. As you develop guys, you can say, hey, look what we did for this guy. We can do that for you too. And then, like I said, you can also say, by the way, you're going to have number two throwing the ball to you, and he's pretty good at it.
Yep, I agree. Let's get back to Matt Wells. JDS asked this. Obviously, Matt Wells is a great addition to the staff. How long do you see him staying at K-State before he finds a head coaching job again? Or is he content where he is for a while? That's a great question, and I think it's probably one only Matt Wells can answer. But I think he's here. I mean, I think he's present. This isn't going to be like his analyst job at Oklahoma. I'm staying here a couple of years until I can find a coordinator job. I don't see anyone lining up to give him a P5 job right now or even after this season. I think, though, if Avery Johnson really erupts into something nationally,
right,
that might propel him to get an offer from a smaller school, you know, Sun Belt or maybe back into the Mountain West area. We'll see how that plays out, but I think he's been a great addition to the staff. And Big B, anytime you can add a veteran coach who's run offenses, been the head coach to your staff, it's going to bring something new to the table. And I think it's challenging Avery because he's really exact on what he wants from his quarterbacks.
Yes, I think it's good all the way around. And not only that, it's kind of what you said, Fitz. Maybe he doesn't want to be a head coach anymore. Maybe it's, you know what, I got a taste of it. I thought it was what I wanted to do, and it isn't. You know, not to mention he's the co-coordinator at K-State. You know, he's not the offensive coordinator. Now, I don't know what the dynamics and the play calling and all that's going to be. Maybe you guys do know that. But at the same time, it's like, look, there's something to be said to just being the offensive coordinator. First of all, it's a great job. You make a lot of money. That's number one. All the pressure is not on you. So it's on a head coach. Now, we've seen if you don't call a good game or your offense is behind, we've seen what can happen there. But that doesn't seem to be the case with Matt Wells at all. I mean, I don't see that being him. I see him being very progressive in his offense. I see him moving forward. I see him getting the best out of what you have to work with and utilizing it, regardless of whatever my system is. If my system is this, but the players that I have do something else, I see Matt Wells saying, you know what? The hell with this. We're doing exactly what they can do well, and we'll expand off of that and just keep going from there. Yeah. We've seen offensive coordinators, not just at Kansas State, but everywhere, that is unable or unwilling to do that. I don't see that out of Matt Wells. I think he's going to be here for a while. Like I said, what would you rather do? Be the offensive coordinator at Kansas State in the Big 12 Conference, or the head coach, and I'm not going to name a school,
yeah,
but in the Sun Belt Conference or something like that. I just don't see
fan base, man.
I just don't see you wanting to do that. I just don't.
I do wonder if Utah State, his alma mater, pops back open where he coached before going to Tech, if that might be something he wants to do to close up his career. I'm not sure.
Right.
But also, I think remarkable for
Glenn, you've gone wonky on us. So
it's not just my internet that's messing
up. Glenn's wonky for all of us, I think. You're kind of frozen up. It's not a bad pose. I wouldn't use it as my dating profile, but it's still pretty good. You look very thoughtful in your frozen screen. Here, let's get to Canelio with one more question. He has, if Hadley Panzer ends up at playing center, would that mean our newcomer Kilty moves inside? I think Kilty's the left tackle.
Yes.
I mean, he's a proven left tackle. Glenn moved.
Hey, am I back?
Yeah, you're back.
I turned off my Wi-Fi.
I think Kilty is going to be a starter, but I am intrigued. They've popped up with interest in an Arkansas tackle. Who's
good, too.
Yeah, pure tackle. I'm not sure how much they're going there. They love Willis. You know, he really grew up last season. Nobody makes more jokes about his first three games than Carver Willis, and I appreciate that so much. I said, I was pretty hard on you. And he goes, I was hard on myself, so I don't blame you. I think they're just looking for another depth piece, and I'm not sure. You got to keep this in mind nowadays, too, with the transfer portal.
Yeah.
How much would that Arkansas tackle cost you in the NIL? And does that mean you can't get another piece that you want for another position group? So it's salary cap, basically. It's craziness. But I think they've got some really good young depth there. And also, I get the vibe there might be some concern about some of these young offensive linemen heading out through the portal. We'll see what happens tomorrow. And let's wrap it up with this. And by the way, JDS asked about CJ Jones. We covered it at the top of the show. You go back and watch the replay. Gills covered him pretty well. Gills, any news? Hold on. That's not the right one. Where's the one I wanted to bring up? There was a question about the big men. What's K-State looking at for big men right now?
Well, I know Balo from Arizona is lined up a visit next week. But again, do you even get there, right? I know probably CJ Jones might have went and visited some other places, but when you lock somebody down and things just go so well on a visit, we'll see if Omar Ballo from Arizona is still going to be in play. But he's a big-time target without a doubt. But I think Indiana's probably in the lead right now from my understanding, what I'm hearing. And so, missing out on Michael Brown-Jones, that one does hurt. There's no other way around that. And that's the reality of it, though. You're going to miss out on some guys. And so I don't want to say that K-State's going to have to wait until, right before the season, late in the summer, to get a guy like Will McNair. But I think, for as much as we want to harp on them not trying to wait and trying to be patient, I think maybe at the center spot, you do maybe just want to take your time. You want to be aggressive, but maybe try to remind yourself that Will McNair was there. You know, Keontae Johnson's obviously not a center, but there's going to be guys there. I don't want to you don't want to bank on that, but your guards are looking pretty darn good now. And so you want to go out and get those centers, but you don't want to force things though, right?
Nope.
You don't want to bring in a bad culture guy, a bad locker room guy. So if you have to be patient and get a guy like Will McNair, I mean, it worked out well for them last year. So see what happens.
If there's a starting five, go ahead, Fitz.
Yeah, let's take a break real quick. We got to get this wrapped up, but let's hear from Synergy one more time, and then we'll have some final thoughts. I'll just let Glenn take it out of the break.
At Synergy Financial Partners, the vision is to build the world's largest consumer financial education and empowerment company. Synergy doesn't just offer you a financial plan. At Synergy, the goal is to help you find your best financial future. Learn more at synergyfinancial.com.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome back to the show. Let's head back to the studio.
Glenn, you were saying...
I just think the center position specifically is probably the one with the greatest domino effect that would open up those opportunities for guys to be in the portal late, because this guy commits to here, so then this guy transfers and commits to here, so then this guy, and it doesn't happen as much with guards because we talked about it, but you're going to play three or sometimes even four guards, so a really good guard commits to your school. You're not like, I got to get out of here because this guy's going to take my minutes. You guys can be on the court at the same time most of the time. When it's a starting five man and a true center, and you're a true center, and then you get a guy who averaged, you know, 12 in the SEC or the Pac-12 or whatever it was, you can kind of read the writing on the wall. And so I think that's probably the position that you see the most movement as a result of movement, if that makes any sense.
I would agree. Fellas, any final thoughts? Gills, you look great today. You've been in focus. You've sounded good. We might have got your studio worked out.
Do I not always look good, though? What the hell?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it's so true. You're like dessert. maybe a cupcake. That's it for the insiders. Make sure I don't know what we got cooking tomorrow on the Big 12 insiders, but make sure you check it out. Maybe it'll be Big B and I just talking about the mess that is the transfer portal. Stay tuned tomorrow to all your social media and of course, gopowercat.com, because the transfer portal opens and we will see how bad it goes, or will it be no big deal for Kansas State? Stay tuned. Of course, next week we'll talk about everything that goes on throughout this week, and hopefully there's more to talk about. By the way, questions were fantastic. Thank you so much for everyone that pitched in questions. It made a great show. In fact, we're having to cut it off to keep it under an hour, and that's been the K-State Insiders.
This has been a GoPowerCat.com and Spirit Street production. Please support this show by subscribing to this YouTube channel or follow us on your favorite podcast platform.
This is Tony Kornheiser's show. I'm Tony. You expected someone else? So what exactly is the show about? I don't know. It's a sports show nominally. Football's over, but we're finally at a point where things matter in college basketball, and baseball season is on deck. Greatest three words in the English language, pitchers and catchers. We have some of the best voices come on and explain what matters or what makes an upset, like Ryan does, 9-8. No, that's not an upset. No, yeah, it is, Bob. And if you're lucky, I might just tell you about my search for discounted sleep pants or my worries about what my dog just ate. Listen on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.